Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out on the edge of the prairie. We finally got our decent snowfall here on Wednesday night, and now Minnesota can look Buffalo and the Yukon in the eye, and we need not be ashamed any longer. Minnesota has been coasting on its reputation for a long time. We've gotten much more admiration than we deserve, but here can this beautiful, beautiful snowstorm on Wednesday. It had been forecast, of course, and yet you don't believe it until it's there. People were sitting in the Chatterbox Cafe, and then suddenly the conversation ceased, and somebody said, "Look, it's snowing." And everybody was quiet, and you look out, and the air is full of snow, God turning the globe upside down, snow coming around. You feel this great whoosh, this great whisper all around you. This town is not that good looking, to be perfectly honest. It looks okay in early spring, some weeks in summer, but it really could use a blanket of white and to make it magical. And now the wreaths are on the streetlights and white lights are hung, and now we're ready for Christmas. And now Ralph's Pretty Good Grocery has the big oranges in it, the big Christmas oranges, the navel oranges, and the mixed nuts and the cider, and everybody is getting ready. People are getting their trees this week. Now that we've gotten this big snowfall, gorgeous snowfall. And then people, of course, were out to shovel snow. Old people who planned to go down to Florida in January were out shoveling by hand, hoping that their neighbors who have big snow blowers would take pity on them. And of course they did, because they are Christian people, but also because they have these enormous snow blowers now. They start out with a little junior snow blower that you have to kick every so often, you know, to get the chunks to fall out. And then they move up to a big snow blower, and some of them now have rider snow blowers with enclosed cabs. And so you can finish doing your sidewalk and driveway in about 90 seconds. And it just doesn't make sense to turn the thing off, and so you go and help other people. Though, of course, people are reluctant to ask for help. Even Mr. Berge, 75 years old, went out to shovel his walk, did not hear any snow blowers on his block at all. He worked at it for a while, and then it just was too much for him, and he snuck into the house. And he called up Jimmy's snow removal, and he talked to Mrs. Jimmy, and she said that Jimmy could come over about 6 o'clock. And Mr. Berge said, "Well, I'll be here. Looking forward to that." His wife had crept up behind him, and she said, "Who are you talking to?" He just about peed his pants. "Now, just getting some information," he said, because he's sheepish about having to need help, you know, with shoveling a walk. This is a man's duty. This is a man's privilege. And so it makes people feel fun. That's why people move to Florida and to Arizona and to endure the desert and the lizards and the poisonous snakes, not to mention the skin cancer and alligators who can move very fast, up to 45 miles an hour in short bursts. Endure all of this, it is because they are ashamed of needing help to shovel their own walks. And we're glad to see them go, because they would just be complaining if they stayed around. They would just always have something to whinge about, and who needs that? It's a dramatic time. It's an intense time. Winter. Daryl and Marilyn Tollerud's girl, Corinne, who's off at college, dumped her boyfriend on Friday because of the snowstorm. She had to stay overnight at his apartment because her car got stuck, and his was stuck too. And so she stayed overnight at his apartment. He was excited about that, but she wasn't. The place was a mess. She discovered, number one, he's a very loud sleeper, and he has twitchy legs in his sleep. Number two, he doesn't have a bathtub and doesn't understand why anyone would want a bathtub. Number three, he does no cooking whatsoever. He lives on frozen pizza. And number five, when she said she was leaving to go back to her apartment, he didn't protest. Done. Gone. The guy, it's all over. In a warm climate, you might have stuck with somebody like that and tried to make it work for 10 or 20 years. But winter brings out the best and the worst in people. Of course, winter has changed. The world has changed. I know that because I had a child 40-some years ago under the old regime, and then I had this little girl about 15 years ago, and everything had changed. Back when I had my first child, my son, fathers were not around much to bring up kids. We were off hunting caribou. We were off and we were running caribou over cliffs, and we were pounding, clubbing them to death, and then we were fighting off men from other tribes who were trying to steal our caribou, and they brought us back briefly for breeding purposes, and then a year later we'd come and have a look at a kid, but then we had to go back and get more caribou. And with my girl, everything was different. Play dates existed. Parents arranging their children's social life, and children were driven to school in the winter. This didn't happen when I was a kid. Everything had changed. When my little girl came along, a father was expected to read books on child rearing, which is like a whole second job. and you were expected to tell your child stories. Well, the stories I had to tell were not fit for children. They were about hunting caribou and being this filthy, gore-smeared, bloody man carrying raw meat on his back to feed his family. Nothing you would ever want a child. You see, it all changed from when I was brought up by dark people who expected the worst, and that's why they saved glass jars, jelly jars, peanut butter jars. They saved them, hundreds of them. You never knew if the economy should crash, these things might be valuable someday. They saved screws and nails and paper clips. They saved tinfoil. They smoothed it out and they kept stacks of it. Thermostat always kept low so you could see your breath, even in the house. Father going from room to room at night saying, "Wow, can anybody leave a room and not turn off a light? I don't understand this. You must think we are Hollywood stars. You must think I am John D. Rockefeller. Well, I am not." And off you went to school in the morning, even when a blizzard was blowing in from Saskatchewan. A blizzard, you were sent off to school, never driven to school. You made your way through the storm. You couldn't see 3 feet in front of your face, just following the whimpers of other children. You figured if they cried out, then the coyotes would get them and they wouldn't get you. And you made your way, just feeling your way with your feet up a gravel road up to where the bus would come, and Jimmy, the bus driver, would pull up and open that bus door, and you got on. He looked haunted. He looked like he'd been up all night. He was sitting there chain-smoking cigarettes, and he was playing rock and roll on the radio in the school bus, and he was drinking coffee, and he was flavoring it. He had a bottle of flavoring under the seat, greasy black hair hanging down. They wouldn't hire somebody like that nowadays to drive a bus, but he was somebody's cousin. That's how he got the job. And so Jimmy drove you, and we knew he was drunk. He was three sheets to the wind. We didn't complain, first of all, because we grew up under this old regime where it was always your fault. It was a kid's fault. It was not adults' fault. Adults stuck together. But also because we thought it was sort of exciting to be driven by a man who was driving very fast and steering with his knees and pouring whiskey into a coffee cup and listening to rock and roll and Jerry Lee Lewis. And he had a .38 pistol in the glove compartment. It was exciting. He was eyeballing us in the rearview mirror and looking at us and saying, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking I'm a drunk, and you're right. You kids tell on me, I'll know who done it. No, come and I'll burn down your house. I don't care who's in it. Well, we didn't say anything. This was a morning when he assumed that school would be closed. And so he'd gotten really drunk the night before. He was blind drunk, and he got lost because he couldn't read the street signs. Not that there were that many of them in the country, but still, he had to have a kid stand beside him and read the signs. And we got lost, hopelessly lost. He was driving north, not east. He was going north. And finally, he just gave up, and he just headed down this dirt road. We were terrified to be in the hands of a psychopath, and a real one. And he drove out onto a lake. It was a frozen lake. We drove out to the middle of the lake, and he was really upset. He just walked out of that school bus. He was out of gas, and he just opened up the hood, and he started pulling wires off it. He was throwing spark plugs out into the snow. He had the pistol on his hip. He sat down in the doorway of the school bus, and we were just scared to death. Scared to death. A couple of the girls started to cry. And then one of the girls, she started to sing, "O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie." And we sang through a couple of verses of that. And then, "Away in a manger, no crib for a bed, the little Lord Jesus laid down his sweet head." And we could see that Jimmy was moved by this. He was moved, and we could see his lips moving. He seemed to be singing with us. I had never thought of Christmas carols as a form of protection against a crazed, armed maniac. But there it was. That's how it happened. And then a man came from a farm with a tractor, and he pulled the school bus there, and we all ganged up in his kitchen, and his wife made us gingerbread, and we were all safe. And Jimmy was fired, but he quit drinking, and he went into educational administration. He was just a kid with a drinking problem, and he took care of it himself. And I think it has partly to do with the fact that we were so unsupervised. Now, nowadays, there would be an investigation, and he would have gone to prison for 10 years, and he would have come out a broken man. But back then, people just didn't keep such close tabs on everything. There wasn't the monitoring that we have now. And so he had the chance to turn himself around. Anyway, that's what I think of when I hear, "O little town of Bethlehem." Just brings back all sorts of memories. Christmas time is a-coming. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average. Riding that school bus, I used to dream about a woman in a red coat and pink boots. I used to dream about her, and now here she is standing before me, Nellie McKay.